chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
We got a special one on the Alana Enquirer podcast. Welcome in. I'm Jeremy Warner, Alana Enquirer publisher, and I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. Today's guest needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one. Anyway, it's the man, the myth, the legend. It's Lauren Tate, News Gazette, WDWS, the original multimedia reporter in Champaign-Urbana, and just an absolute legend in my profession, and really in Alana Athletics. I mean, he's synonymous with Alana Athletics because he's seen more of Alana Athletics than anybody. Right. So I had a lot of fun catching up with Lauren, talking about his life, talking about his profession, and talking about the Illini. I asked him some questions that people ask everybody about the Illini, the Mount Rushmores, the 89 versus 05, the coaches. But I also dive a little bit into the profession, how much has changed since he started back right after World War II. And he's just an encyclopedia of Illini knowledge. And he's a guy I really, really respect. I didn't really get to know Lauren when I was a student here, but when I came back from covering in DeKalb for a couple months and came back on the Illini beat, Lauren has been nothing but kind to me and gracious to me, and I've tried to learn as much as I can from him, and I feel like I'm at this point, it's weird to say because he's such an icon, but I feel like I can call him my friend. And I cherished that. So, and I cherished my hour with him talking with Lauren Tate. And this was really a selfish podcast for me because I wanted to get to know Lauren even a little bit more than I do. And I did on this podcast. And I feel like you all will enjoy it because of that. And I just love that we can talk to him for an hour here and kind of dive into what has been a storied life. He knows a lot of important people around Illini Athletics. He's seen a lot about Illini Athletics. Nobody has a better pulse on it. And, man, he's still killing it. He's still killing it. He's still a star. He's still doing his Saturday morning show. He's still doing his weekly column. And he hasn't acted a day over 60, to be honest with you. He talks about his back acting up, that he can't golf as much anymore, or it hurts when he golfs, but he's 91 years old, and you wouldn't know it. So Lauren Tate is going to be up next. This is one of the podcasts I'll probably listen to a couple times. I rarely go back and listen to it, but I myself will go back and listen to it, and I hope you do as well. So the man, the myth, the legend, Lauren Tate, News Gazette, coming up next on the Illini Enquirer podcast. All right, welcome into the Illini Enquirer podcast, and I've been looking forward to this for a long time. One of the guys that obviously I think most people have great respect for what he's done, what he's meant for Illinois athletics, whether they want to admit it or not. It's Lauren Tate, the man, the myth, the legend, the News Gazette, DWS. Lauren, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Yeah, what I'm worried about is what I can do in the future. I don't know how much future I got, but I'm looking forward to whatever it is.
91 years young. Lauren, I guess you've been doing this for so long and you continue to do it. So that's my first question to you. A lot of people always ask me like what my career plans are and you know, retirement plans are. That never seemed like it was in your lexicon, that you just wanted to go down to Florida or go to Arizona or whatever and just get away from it all.
Well, you know, I enjoy, like I told you earlier off the off the record here. I mean, I just finished my column for Sunday. I really enjoy working a little bit. I'd rather do that than do nothing. I've tried doing nothing and it doesn't work. The days are long, and I'd rather read up on things. And I do an awful lot of reading, and I read Jeremy Werner, which I think is probably the best at covering Illinois these days that we've ever had. I think you do a great job. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on here, but it's what I really feel, and I tell people that. And I think you work real hard at it, and I follow people, and I try to form my own ideas at the same time.
Well, I really appreciate that, Warren. That means a lot coming from you, and you've been something I've looked up to. I want to dive into your career a little bit, and I want to dive into some fun questions that I'm sure you get all the time, but we can put on the record here a little bit. But you were kind of... You're born into journalism, right? Like you're born
in. Oh yeah, my dad ran the Piatt County Republican in Monticello, and I was there from the time I was in the third grade. That's when my mother married Darrell Tippett in Monticello. My dad died when I was 6 years old, and in Kentucky, mm-hmm. and you know, I just was always around the paper. I took journalism at the University of Illinois. I was writing for the paper even in those days, a column. I wrote a column called Tate to Tate by Tate, but nobody could pronounce it in Monticello, so I changed it later on. But in any case, yeah, I've been, that goes all the way back to the mid 1940s, late 1940s.
What was writing for a newspaper, a local newspaper, like in the 1940s?
Well, I was just writing a sports column. I mean, I don't know what it was like. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I'd be ashamed to show you some of those columns now. And we had this actually happened. We had a fellow, a really good friend of mine that died at that time, is Herbie Dressbach. And one of the fellows that I hung around with said, could I write an obit about, you know, kind of an obit and the story about Herbie, who's such a sports fan. And so I just put it in my column. I mean, I didn't even give him credit. I mean, it was like I wrote it. I did all kinds of crazy stuff like that in those days, I guess.
Well, Warren, people forget. I know you're going to self-deprecate yourself here, but you played baseball at Illinois. You played basketball at Illinois. Like, so sports,
well,
I mean, you were
sports.
Let's just
say I came out for the team and was on the roster. Let's just leave it at that. I never made... I dropped off basketball in my junior year. I made a really strong effort in baseball my junior year, and I was number two shortstop. And this is how good I was. Vince Feigenbuss beat me out, and he was a year younger, and he was a sophomore. Of course, freshmen weren't ineligible. I was on the first freshman team in baseball. But anyway, he beat me out at shortstop. And then when it came time to substitute for him, they took the second baseman and moved him over, and I was still didn't get in. So, yeah, Johnny Davis was a better shortstop than I was, and he played second base. So that's how low I was on the totem pole. And the thing about baseball is I sat on the bench, and, you know, I can still remember coach looking down the bench for a pinch hitter and just kind of not looking at me because he didn't want to, and I wasn't going to be the guy. Yeah. I just wasn't good enough. But I started pitching when I was about 25. I had 10 great years of pitching I got to pitch against the U.S. Pan American team, which was a great honor, and when I was in Hammond. And then the 2 days before I came to the News Gazette to go to work, I pitched in the national tournament in Wichita and actually won my game. I came out in the ninth inning, though. But those are the things I remember. And you know, I just love to play sports. And one of my big disappointments now is that my back is just kind of preventing me from enjoying golf. As just in the last year or two, I'm getting too stiff and sore back there. And I haven't played now for 2 weeks, and you know, I'll be out there again, but I feel great at my age as long as I don't play golf. When I play golf, I find soreness back there.
Yeah. Well,
and that's the end of my story.
Well, I'm sure that's, you know, a big reason you've stayed active. How long did you play softball till, Warren?
Oh, mid 80s. mid-80s. I played softball. I started playing in the old men's league at age 56. I remember I skipped the first year. It was beneath me. I'm not going to play in that old men. And then I realized I better. So I played in that league for quite a number of years, actually, 30 years.
Yeah. Well, that might be the secret right there. But obviously, we all get into sports or dive into sports. Like, my brother played sports. My dad didn't, had no interest. My mom didn't have much interest, but my brother was. So that's how I kind of got into sports, loved it, and I wanted to stick around it. I wasn't good enough to play past high school, Lauren. So you were definitely a better athlete than me, but I just wanted to be around it. Like, why did you get attracted to sports, and why have you wanted to hang around it and be around it?
Oh, I don't know why. I mean, it's just built in. I mean, they got pictures of me in Kentucky when I was 4 years old hitting the baseball. You know, I just always loved to compete, and to not compete and not compete in golf right now is a blow to me, because I would really like to be out there on these summer mornings, but I will be, but it isn't the same. I mean, I'm not competitive anymore. I'm just out there getting exercise, right? Basically is all I'm doing.
Well,
I can't explain what drives a person to play baseball until they're 35 as an amateur or semi-pro, whatever that was. And I can't explain what made me keep playing old men's softball till I was in my 80s. I don't know what caused it. I mean, but I know what drove it drove me. I wanted to play.
Yeah. Well, you went from Hammond, where you started your career, right?
I was there 11 years, huh?
So what were those 11 years like for you, starting in this sports journalism field?
Oh, they were tremendous. Let's understand, I came home from the Army, and I was there in Monticello working for my dad on the newspaper, and T.O. White from the News Gazette called me, and I called in Ekus Vaughn and I put together a baseball team in Monticello in the EI League. We were the co-managers. And I called in the games to T.O. White at the News Gazette every Monday morning, and because they had an afternoon paper at that time, and he wanted the calls around 6:30, as I recall, something like that. So I called him in, and he said one day, he said, they've got a job opening. I just talked to John Whitaker in Hammond, and he's got a job opening. He needs somebody right now. And he said, would you be interested? And I said, well, I don't know. So I called John, and I went up there, and I met him at the Kankakee Golf Course, as a matter of fact, on a Monday, and he told me to come up and apply, and I came up, and he said they'd give me $75 a week if I would come to work for him. And I said, well, I'm getting $75 in Monticello with my dad, and I guess I won't leave. And he said, sit here a minute. And he went up and talked to DeLaurier, the president, and came back down and said, the publisher, that is, and he said, would 100 do? And I said, yeah, 100 would really do. So I was making $5,000 that year.
Big money.
I was rich.
big money in those days. What did you earn? Like, what was? I mean, we all have formative years in this business. What stuck with you from Hammond?
Well, I don't know what stuck with me. I covered with the high school sports, and at some point along the way, in 1963, I became sports editor, and I wrote a column. And I've always been opinionated, and I like writing my opinions and, you know, debating with people about things. And I guess that's, I really, and so I think as you get older, what you do is you do the things that come easier for you, as opposed to the things that come hard. I mean, I couldn't be in there at night on Friday night doing all that high school stuff and you know, up till midnight and working. I mean, that's work. But what I do is fun. At least it's fun for me. And just the column I just sent in just now, I work quite a bit. And you say, well, how long did it take you? Well, you know, I've been reading up on this particular subject for years, if not, and more recently, in recent weeks. And so, it's just what I really enjoy doing this, and as long as they'll let me, I'll continue.
Well, and everybody still wants to read it. You come home to Champaign. What was that like when you got the job?
Well, it was a homecoming because I came back here and my family was here. Now, I have a great thing that's working for me right now. I've got three girls and a boy, and they're all right here. They're all right here in town. I was at Lori's dinner 2 days ago. I was with Kathy yesterday. Melinda's up in Montreal, where her daughter just had twins, so I won't see Melinda for a few more days. But my kids are all around here. Travis is here, and it's just tremendous to be able to see all your family right here. At least most of my family, all of my kids, and all my grandkids aren't here, but all my kids are.
What it mean for you to come back and cover Illinois, the university?
I always covered Illinois. I mean, I always was close to Illinois. I attended the University of Illinois. I knew all the athletes because I was a semi-athlete myself. I knew all the athletes, and I came down to Illinois games anytime I had a chance. I was here for the opening of the Assembly Hall in 1963. I remember that specifically because when we four of us came down from Hammond, and when we came out, we couldn't find our car. It was a round building. We'd never been in a round building before. We didn't know where the car was parked. We had to wait for a whole bunch of cars to leave before we found ours. But anyway, Illinois has always meant so much to me. I would have to tell you, and this is a true statement, and nobody will believe it, but I was the recruiting contact for Northwest Indiana for Tommy O'Connell and later for Pete Elliott for several years. Not that I knew that they always believed everything I told them, but I would tell them stuff about players. And one year we brought down two players, Jim Hicks and Lulu James from East Chicago Roosevelt. And Hicks later, by the way, was a White Sox left fielder. I don't know if you'd remember that. It might be before your time.
We could use him now. Yeah, we could use him now, Warren.
But there was a Jim Hicks, great left field. He's the same Jim Hicks that came down here as the receiver and flunked out, ultimately. But in any case, I was close to Pete. I remember when we lost to Michigan when the year that we won the Rose Bowl. That very year, we lost one game. We lost to Michigan and Bump Elliott. And I remember more. You say, well, did I interview him? Yeah, I did, but I was doing more consoling than I was interviewing. I said, don't worry, Pete, you'll still win this thing. You know, I was more of a fan. I was a fan, absolute fan, and not a legitimate writer until the slush fund hit. Mm. When the slush fund hit, that was shortly after I came back to Champaign. And I realized I couldn't be a fan anymore as a writer. I had to take on. And then we had a series of problems like that all the way up through Mike White.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball. And baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
That's a great segue into what I want to ask you, Oren, is I went to University of Illinois. I wanted to come here partly because of D. Brown, Darren Williams, and that 05 team, right? But like when you start covering them, your fandom slowly slips away a little bit. So I'm wondering, like, people always ask me, like, how are you not a fan anymore? How did that happen with you? Like, why did that happen with you?
You realize your job. It's your job. I reached a point where I was the main guy writing all the stuff about Stoner when Stoner was eliminated. And at that time, at one time I was a favored guy with Pete Elliott and later with Mike White and of course Lou Henson. But during the Stoner era, I was known as that damn Tate. And I talked to Kent Brown one day about, he was here at that time, and he said that was basically what my name was at that time.
Yeah, that's a difficult place to be. I mean, it's a place as a journalist you got to be willing to go, right? Like there's been some times I've gotten calls that are uncomfortable, but your job is sometimes, right?
Let me just tell you the first week I was here, the first year I was here. We had a football season, of course. It wasn't very good. And Harry Combs was the basketball coach. And Harry Combs is from Monticello. I had played golf with Harry in Monticello. I still remember him breaking a club out there. He had a heck of a temper. But Harry, when I sprained my ankle in a game against Urbana in the sectional when I was a sophomore, maybe it was the regional sectional, whichever it was, and they carried me into the locker room. The first person in the locker room was Harry Combs. That's amazing. I mean, he was the head coach at the University of Illinois. And of course, at that time, he had been the coach in Champaign. Well, what I'm trying to get at is I was so close to him and so close to Pete. When Harry went up for the Big Ten meetings that year in a plane, I was the only guy in the plane with him. When I wanted to do an interview, I called him, said, could I do an interview? He says, I got to go to the bank. Why don't I come by and see you? You don't have that anymore. No. You don't have that relationship anymore. It was that same way with Lou Henson. We used to sneak out for drinks after practice and that kind of stuff, you know. And when Harv Smith was here, I'd watch practice almost every day. We don't even get to watch practice now. But in those days, 4 o'clock, man, that's when you start watching practice. Mm-hmm. And then after practice, you sneak out and have a drink with the coach and learn a lot of stuff. Now I learn it from you and other people that, you know, that are able a lot closer to it than I am.
Why do you like?
I yearn for the good old days.
I was going to say, well, like, I'll have some conversation with coaches. Like I can talk with Brett. I saw him in Canada for Sydney and Chase and get to talk to him a little bit just as a person. But why do you think that's changed so much? And what did you gain of having that relationship with the coach? Even if you had to criticize.
The first thing you have to do is be careful not to use something that they told you that you know you shouldn't use. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. And Lou would slip information to me, and then what I would have to do is get confirmation somewhere else and use that for the same information, and just to show that I didn't get it from him, essentially. But the isolation came when people from social media went to practice, got on their cell phones, and told people that so-and-so got in a fight today or so-and-so did something wrong that they wouldn't have seen if they hadn't been at practice. There are a lot of fights in football at practice. A lot of times guys get upset. You can't report that and still be at practice because the coach is going to say, if you're going to report that, fine. You're not going to be here because I've got the ability to prevent you from being here. And that's what really basically happened. That's how I lost, because of what other guys did at practice that prevented me from being in practice.
Yeah. No, like Jerry Kill, when I covered him, said, you don't report injuries, you don't report plays. Anything's got to be confirmed through me. And I was fine with that because you got to learn about the team. Right? Like, that's the most important thing. And you do understand in this business, like, fights are going to happen. Swear words are going to be said. Unless it's
guys
like,
are going to get hurt that they don't want the other team to know that my right tackle's got a shoulder problem.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They just don't, I mean, they, that's one of the secrets they want to be able to keep.
Right. Well, Lauren, you were the original multimedia reporter, at least in this area. You did newspapers, you got into radio. I don't know how many people know you did, what, more than a decade of TV?
11 years of TV for Channel 15, yeah.
What drove you to that? Because that's kind
money.
Of...
Money. I needed more money.
It's kind of ahead of its time, Warren.
I think I started at $25 a show for 4 minutes. I mean, look, sports on TV, on the news thing, is really simple. Particularly when I'd spent all day working to learn all the things that I was going to throw out in 4 minutes, and a couple of minutes of those are interviews, so you really don't have much time to do anything other than give scores. So that wasn't something that was very difficult, but it took time, and at some point I tried to stop several times. Tom Stocker came in and took over for me at one time, and then Stocker left, and I had to to do it again. And I finally told the station that, you know, I just didn't want to do it anymore. I had this idea in 1977 or 8, right in there when Larry Stewart was retiring. I wanted to do a radio show on Saturday morning. And I thought it would work. And Larry said, no, we're not going to do that. I spent enough time down here. So the only thing was, about 6 months later or whatever the time was, Larry announced his retirement in the future. He was going to retire in about 6 months or something, or end of the year, I think it was. And so I went over his head and I said, why don't we have a Saturday morning show? And then Flynn came back to me and said, it's a good idea, but we'll have to see what Larry thinks. And the next day, Larry walked up to me and says, I've got an idea. Why don't we have a Saturday show? I said, fine. He said, just remember one thing. I'm boss. I said, that's fine. So Larry was here for a few more months. We did the shows together, and then Jim Turpin was hired, and I continued to do it with him. And we've been on the air now since over 40 years.
I was going to say, 40-year show. Have they given you a raise yet, Warren?
I got a $10 raise under Turpin, and I got a $10 raise about a year ago.
Wow.
So in 42 years, I got a $20 raise. And I'm not doing it for the money. I could use all the money I can get, but I basically, I'm just saving it for my kids or giving it to them now.
Warren, did you ever get offered to leave Champaign?
No, although I tried a couple of times, but I didn't get very far. I tried to get on when I was doing TV. I had a chance to go up to Chicago and talk to some people up there, and it didn't work out. They weren't interested in me. And I don't think I have. I did some work in selling. I sold mutual funds my last few years in Hammond, and I also continued down here briefly. But there's just too much work to be the sports thing, but it's too much fun.
Yeah.
And so I stuck with it.
I was going to ask, because people will ask me even now, like, where do you want to be? Like, you got to take a step up. And I say, I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing, covering Illinois. You know, being a small fish in a big pond doesn't appeal to me as much as some other people. But why didn't you leave? Why didn't you want to go try it at some other market, St. Louis, Chicago, whatever it was?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I was good enough. Number one, I don't think I would have probably worked out in St. Louis or Chicago. I just never made any moves in that direction. I was always too busy, and you know, for years and years, I wrote 7 columns a week. I wrote every day, you know, you just kind of, in those days, you just kind of shot them out, and more now. I have way more information because of the internet. I mean, like way, way, way more information, and get it quicker. And the problem is just remembering it all. I suppose this week I've probably spent, I don't know, 20 hours reading and keeping up on stuff. I read The Athletic. I'm reading you and your gang. And I'm trying to keep up on athletics all. And I read the paper. I the only thing I'm falling behind on, I don't keep up on high school sports near as much as I did back in the days when I was picking the All-State team and all that. I've fallen way back on that.
Warren, obviously you've seen some major changes in this business. What do you think has been a positive change? I mean, you mentioned the internet, but what do you think has been a positive change in this industry?
Well, let me just tell you, when I started in Hammond, we got this Urbana Courier. Bert Bertin was a writer, columnist, sports. And we would get that paper like maybe 2 at a time or 3, and they'd be 2 days late. And now I picked up the paper this morning to read the sports. There was almost no article in that I was interested in that I didn't already know wasn't always already aware of or had already read about it. And, you know, in other words, I was reading last night what was in the paper today, because that's what I do. So information, I have just much, much more information now when I sit down to write a column than I had earlier. I don't know what, I mean, it improved all through the years. It wasn't just a sudden thing. It was just over time. You find out ways to get information. And, you know, like I read writers at Indiana. I read writers at Purdue. I read, different doctorman at Iowa. Mm-hmm. He's just terrific. I mean, I learn more from him than almost all the rest of them put together. I think he writes for The Athletic now, and I read The Athletic all the time. It wears me out. You can't keep up. There are hundreds of writers for The Athletic all over the country, and they're all good, and they're all qualified. And I don't know if you just can't read it all, but I try.
Yeah. What do you think is the change you've not liked? The change that you think has hurt or been the most difficult?
Well, the thing that hurts most is the inability to be more closely attached to the team, to be able to watch practices, to be a little bit more inside. But I leave it up to you to do all the recruiting work. I don't do that anymore at all. I mean, I just follow it, but I'm not talking to the parents and that sort of thing as you would do if you were really involved. You would talk to everybody, the coach of the player and the parents of the player, and try to find out, you know, if we're recruiting somebody. The one big difference is that when Lou was here, when Lou Henson was recruiting, he'd recruit 4, 5, 6 guys, mostly in the state of Illinois. You could really follow that. Now, how many offers have we made for the next class? 40? You know, or the next two classes. I mean, it's the numbers is so great that it's almost meaningless. Mm-hmm. Unless you know exactly which one they really want. But what about all those, and some of those 40 or so guys that they list as interested in Illinois have already committed to somebody else.
Yeah.
Some of those.
Yeah. I want to ask you, like, your relationship with Lou Henson seemed pretty special. I had you on after Lou passed away, but what did that relationship mean to you, and just how would you describe that relationship?
Like, it just, he was, Lou was so willing to allow you to get on the inside a little bit. And I was, and he had great teams in the 1980s. And I followed him, you know, I went to practice and we just became closer and closer. It was something that grew over time. I don't know that it was planned or anything like that. It just happened. And if you couldn't get along with Lou Henson, you couldn't get along with anybody. And I wrote things that he didn't like at times. And I had a system at that time where if I wrote something I knew that he wasn't going to like, I just stayed away from him for a day. And by the second day, he'd forgotten. Mary hadn't forgotten, but he had forgotten. But I tried to be as fair as I could with Lou. And I thought that, you know, it was interesting when it came down to the end, you know, he called Turpin and myself, and we talked about his retirement, whether he should. And then, of course, a year later, he took a job at New Mexico State for $1 for the whole year.
Yeah,
he came. He was down there trying to help them hire a coach, and they wound up hiring him.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Lauren, if social media had been available your entire career, what story would have been the craziest that you covered at Illinois? Like, what would have been crazier?
It wouldn't have been a game. Let's start there. It would have been one of the issues. It would have been the Stoner situation. It would have been the slush fund. It would have been the David Wilson case. It would have been something of that nature. It wouldn't have been a game, because those are the things that always attracted me more so than a single game. I mean, the games are important. Games in Minneapolis, when we went up there and won a couple games and got to the Final Four, that was great. But it would always be the issues. I like issues more than games.
Yeah. What was tougher to cover, the slush fund scandal or the stuff around Deion Thomas?
The toughest part for me by far was the slush fund, because I arrived here in August, late August, and the slush fund broke on in December of that year. And I was so green and so I didn't know anything about what the rules were in the Big Ten, you know, what we were violating, and there were all kinds of stories going out, and it was a terrible. I was just following Bert Bertina around, trying to figure out what he was doing, so I could get the same story for the News Gazette that he was putting in the Courier. I was at a loss for those 6 months, and then of course to have your best friend, the two coaches that I was closest to for years, Combs and I was. One time, Combs called me. He had to make a speech up in Northern Indiana, and he couldn't make it. He called me, and I did the speech for him. One of the few that ever turned out good for me, because I'm not a very good speaker. But in any case, that having the problems and how to deal with Pete Elliott and Harry Combs when they were, you know, in that much trouble, that was really difficult for me.
How did those scandals, how has that shaped Illinois athletics, Warren, just the backbone, the foundation of it?
Well, first of all, we got a bad reputation for a long period of time, all the way up till Gunther. Gunther's program avoided, that was one of the main things he wanted to do, was run an honest program and not have problems, because we'd had problems under Stoner, we'd had problems with Mike White, we had problems with, you know, about the Dion case, you know, all about the so many different things that happened there. And we had about a couple decade siege of problems, and until those could get straightened out, Illinois fell behind. Illinois really fell behind during that period, and it's been hard to catch up ever since. We make a run at it, but we don't sustain.
Yeah. So where do you think Illinois is at right now with Josh Whitman, Brett Bielema, and Brad?
I think they got the right people. I think Josh is an AD that could be commissioner. I mean, that's what I think of Josh. I think he's just the best there is, but we've got a very difficult situation developing in football. We're in 2024, not this season, but the next season, we're likely to have, and assuming no more additions to the Big Ten, we're likely to have 16 teams in a single division, which means that the top two teams would then be in the playoff, as opposed to the winners of two divisions. And we're going to be in a situation where Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan and USC are going to dominate this conference, I surely believe. And when they do, the rest of us, particularly the Minnesotas and the Illinois and the Purdues and the Indianas, we're all going to be Northwestern. We're going to be down the road and just meaningless in a conference that big, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
That's to me is a major concern. And I don't know that there's anything we can do about it. It's not what's best for Illinois. It's what's best for the conference and getting in the playoffs. And now, as long as we're dealing with it from that perspective, Illinois is in trouble.
Yeah.
In football.
Yeah.
In basketball, I can't tell you what's going on when you change your lineup every year. I mean, with this transfer portal, it's just crazy. I don't know. I think that we'll know an awful lot more within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And Illinois could either be very good next season or very average.
Yeah.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
There's some must-ask questions of a guy who's covered Illinois as long as you have. So I'm going to put you on the spot with a couple of these, Warren.
Sure.
Who's your Mount Rushmore of Illini athletics athletes?
Okay. Mount Rushmore, you mean football, basketball? Be a little more specific.
Should we? Okay. No, I appreciate that. Football. We'll go football. Four guys.
Well, I mean, Grange and Buck, this are the top two. And then after that, I think it's just anybody's guess. I don't know who the next two would be. I mean, my favorite was JC, but, you know, JC had that one great year. But I think
What was it about JC Caroline for people?
Well, he broke in as a sophomore and we beat Ohio State 40-22 or whatever that score was. And he led the nation in rushing, and he was just a flashy, hard to tackle, hard run. He was evasive enough, but he would run over you if he could. I mean, he was a slasher, much more of a slasher than I would say that Chase Brown was. Mm-hmm. Chase Brown was really good and undoubtedly better at this point in his career and bigger. But JC was always kind of my favorite at that point. And he came back here and coached all those years. And then, of course, he stayed in Urbana and coached in Urbana and taught school in Urbana. And he was a great one. I'd have to sit down and think more about that. Basketball has always been a problem, because if you listen to Mark Coombs or other guys that were close to the 1989 team, including Gil, they will tell you that Kenny Battle was the driving force of the 1989 team. I always thought Nick Anderson was better, and Nick Anderson proved to be a lot better professionally, but we get our minds are tainted in this way, that when we see a guy really perform well professionally, it affects how you thought of him as a collegiate player, because we've had great collegiate players who didn't do much professionally, and we've had guys like Eddie Johnson who averaged 8 points as a freshman, and he got a little better each year, and then he got a little better all the time in the pros, and same thing for Harper. Mm-hmm. He kept getting better and better and better. He always guarded the other team's best player. He was a good scorer. I think he had an 8-year stretch where his scoring average went up every year, and starting at Illinois, 3 years at Illinois, and then riding on into the pros. Yeah. So I don't know. I haven't helped you here. Maybe I haven't. I don't know who was the best player of all time in basketball at the University of Illinois. I guess we would settle on Darren Williams, but again, it's because of what he did professionally.
Right, right.
And D. Brown wasn't bad either.
I was going to say.
D. Brown played 4 years, but he didn't make it professionally, really. Right. He didn't make it in the NBA.
Right. So I'm sure you get asked this all the time. Head-to-head, who wins, 89 or 05? Illini.
I've always said 89, and I stay for a reason. The 89 depth was a lot different. You had Liberty coming off the bench. You had more good players, and you had Larry Smith, who was a sixth man actually and led the team in assists, so he was more than just a sixth man. He was a regular who didn't start most of the time.
By the way,
they played a tougher schedule by far, and they had more pros.
They were longer, athletic. I think the 05 team.
The same. Hamilton was the tallest, and I don't think he was 6'7". He might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 6'6", 6'7", somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And long arms and really good player. But then you had Gil, who had a long career in the pros. You had Nick Anderson, a long career. I mean, it'd be close, and the record of the 2005 team was better.
Yeah.
Their record was better. 37-2, he should have won the national championship.
Yeah.
You know, they took more threes in that game than any game they took all season, and they just didn't hit enough of them.
Yep. And they lost by a couple possessions, right?
Yep. Yep.
So what was is the national championship game or those final fours your biggest memories of games you've covered?
The biggest memory is the game in suburban Chicago, where was that, Rosedale or Rosemont, whatever that place was, what we were at. You probably remember. I can't remember. But where were we?
Rosemont, yeah.
Rosemont, okay. And we rallied from 15 down with 4 minutes to go. And the thing I remember, and it's so funny because it related to another game we played, the writers from Chicago were all finishing their stories with 4 minutes to go. And we were riding across the street from the game. They were. I didn't go across until the game was over. Evidently, I had more time than they did, but they are on deadlines. And all those guys had left early and were filing their story, and they had to change it. The same thing happened in Los Angeles the year that George threw the two touchdown passes to beat USC 14-13, the game where we were trailing 13-0 in the fourth quarter and hit those two touchdown passes. And I remember those Chicago writers, again, they were filing their story. Illinois got shut out. And all of a sudden, Illinois won. And so that's the kind of stuff I remember. But those are great wins and great comebacks. We've had a few of those.
The way we file stories now is with the internet, Warren. We can be anywhere and file a story. I remember when I started this business, I had to find a McDonald's to get Wi-Fi to file a story. But how did you guys have to file stories back in the day?
It was a trick all the time. I've even had to dictate stories on the phone because of deadlines and things back in that day. And we had I don't know what the thing was called, a porta bubble or something, where we put the phone in the machine and it would translate the game. I mean, when I started out, the first time I went to Ohio State, I had to find a Western Union to send the story. Now listen, I wrote the story. It comes out at the News Gazette in all caps. All caps. Now they had and when it was on a linotype, they probably had 20 mistakes in it by the time it went from the all caps through a linotype writer who had to figure out which ones should be capitalized and what wasn't. Then they would send it to what we had several ladies who did the proofreading, and they didn't know the first thing about sports. And I remember one morning I got back. It was a Sunday morning. I grabbed the paper and I was reading. I was on the bed when I started seeing all these mistakes. I had my column probably had 10 mistakes in it. And I threw the newspaper and knocked down the shades of the room. I was so upset. But those were the days. I mean, when you just couldn't do anything about it. I tried to make corrections one time, and the union was going to throw charges against me for fooling around with the type. Hmm. See, when I worked for my dad, and we made when we filled out a page, it was all metal type.
Yeah.
And it was upside down, and you had to learn to read it. So I could read it. So when I came to the News Gazette all these years later, I could read the type, but you can't touch the type. The union won't let you touch it. I touched it, and that was the last time I touched it. I never did it again.
It's a different era, at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Best coach that you covered at Illinois?
Well, it's Mike Small's the best coach we ever had, I think, don't you? Tiley was right there. But I suppose you're talking about that. Bill Self is the best coach. And it was a Gunther mistake not to give him a formidable raise to keep him, because that created some problems when we let him get away.
Do you think they had any chance to keep him?
There's a chance, because at that time he had a great recruiting class coming in, had a great player from the East whose name I've forgotten.
Charlie Villanueva,
Villanueva, that's the guy. And he had talent. And the other thing you got to remember is, at that precise time in those years, we were just as good as Kansas. I mean, Kansas had a better history, but we had a pretty good history too in the 80s and up. And so I think there was a chance, but it would have had to have been a different approach by Gunther, like a lot more money than Gunther ever wanted to give. You saw what he paid Weber when Weber came in. I mean, Weber might have been the lowest paid coach in the Big Ten at that time. And I think that he had concerns about the finances, and he felt that self-loyalty was, you know, was not, he felt he was disloyal to take the approach he did. And you know, that's what coaches do everywhere.
Yep.
Coaches, most of them go for the most money. That's what we all do. Some, you know,
it's capitalism. Somebody else,
you know, I'm not criticizing it. I mean, I don't blame coaches for getting as much money as they can.
Yeah. Who's the Atlanta athlete or that people don't talk enough about that you've covered, Warren? Because I know you really like Derek Harper. We've talked about that before, but is there anybody else?
I don't think there was any question when we had Harper that everybody realized how good he was, and I mean, he was special. You know, here's the problem. I'm a lot more impacted by way back when I was close to guys. Like, I was the roommate of Don Sunderland when he's the most valuable player in the Big Ten. People today have no concept of how popular he was at that time. Illinois had gone to the Final Four in 49 when he was a sophomore, and again when he was a senior. When he was a senior, there was only one other senior on the squad, and that was the sixth man, Ted Beach. But Morris and Palmer and Bredar were all key players on that team. They were all my class. And Red Kerr was just 1 year from joining the team. He came in at mid-semester. And those guys were, you know, I was so close to those guys. How can I ever be that, you know, how can I ever favor any other player than those that I was around all the time and actually in the same room with Sunderleaf? Mm-hmm. He was never there, though. He had a date every night.
So were you going out with him? Because that might be a good guy to hang around.
No, but I was a pool shark in those days. And I took Don on we had a pool table at the Sigep house. And I said, okay, we'll play 10 games for a dollar a game. And I beat him every game. I was pretty good at that time. I held the record in Monticello for three rail billiards, and so I was a sneaky guy with the pool clue. So he owed me $10. He said, why don't we go over to Huff across the street, it's just right across the street, and shoot maybe horse or something, and let's see how that turns out. Well, I thought I was a really good shooter, you know, I could shoot with anybody. He won 10 in a row. I lost the same 10 that I had just won on the pool table. I lost to Don in shooting, and well, you know, I was just really torn when he was killed a few years later in a car accident. Yeah. With his wife. It was awful. That was in 1963 when he was killed.
Was there anything else that was tough to cover like that you remember most? I mean, for me, Bobby Rountree is, you know, I know for Lante, Matt Heldman was.
Yeah, Matt Heldman was really bad. Of course, those guys were gone at the. I mean, Matt Heldman was gone at the time, and mm-hmm. I don't know, the toughest thing I had to write. I wrote a column about my dad, my stepdad, when he died, and that's the only column I ever wrote that I had tears running down my face as I wrote it. He was such a great guy, but
what do you mean to you, Warren?
Excuse me?
What did he mean to you?
Oh, he meant everything to me. He treated me like I was king. He took a little kid that was out of Kentucky and didn't know, and I was a troublemaker. I just was a really bad kid, and he took me in, and I think my mother married him because she kind of tested some guys that she went out with when I was living in Hoopston, my first and second grade, she would come up there with maybe a boyfriend or something. And if I didn't like the guy, she wouldn't date him anymore.
She had veto power.
And when Tip came up, you know, he'd lift me up and played catch with me and did all that kind of stuff. And you know, I actually played ball with him 1 year. His last year might have been my first playing in Monticello fast pitch softball. And I was a shortstop that year, and he was on the town team, and he was a left fielder. And there was a ball hit between us. I was trying to catch a fly ball. I'm running out, and I can't get there, and he can't get there. And the ball drops between us along the left field line, and he picks up the ball on the first hop and fires it to second. He had a good, strong overhand throw, and he's headed to throw the ball at second base, and the ball hit me right square in the back of the head, right out of his hand, knocked me down. But that's the only problem I ever had with him. He hit me with the ball once, but he was terrific.
Yeah,
he straightened me out. I was a bad kid.
Yeah, yeah, and taking over that father duty, I had to mean a lot. So I wanted to ask you this, Warren. You're still writing, man, and you're still writing well, and I read you every chance I can get. What's your outlook when you're in your 90s and you're still doing this and you still love doing it? Like, what's your outlook?
I just am going to do it as long as they let me. I mean, I enjoy doing it, and I don't feel any different than I did years ago. I mean, I mean, as long as I don't play golf, I don't hurt. And I will play golf, and I have played golf this year. I had one nice 9-hole on the blue. I actually shot 39 one day, and I thought, oh boy, it's all back, you know. And then I played another 9, and then I spent the next 4 days getting over the backaches. But it seems like when I swing that I'm straining something in my back. Mm-hmm. And I got so much arthritis in there from 3 surgeries that I'm not going to get any better, so I know when I go out and play that what's going to happen. But anyway, I as far as the writing is concerned, I enjoy it so much that I don't want to stop, and we'll see what happens in the future. So it's not up to me.
Right, right. This is a loaded question, Warren. But yep. How do you hope you're remembered?
Oh my gosh. How do I hope I'm remembered? Boy, oh boy. I wish you had asked me that earlier so I could think about it. I don't know. I don't think that. I think that I will be a controversial person that some people will say that, you know, he was a good writer, and some people will say he was prejudiced, or he, you know, or the, I don't know what. I'm sure I get criticism, so I know that everybody's not going to feel the same about me. I think there's a big, I think that if you do your job properly, that I'm involved in as far as writing and talking on radio, that I think that probably there are going to be divergent feelings about you. And I'm sure there will be divergent feelings about me. I've had a bad temper, and I wish I hadn't, but I've done some things that way that I regret. I got thrown out of a ball game sitting on the sideline, a softball game one time, and I wasn't even playing. All I said was, well, I used a bad word. I said, that was a bad call. And the umpire said, you're out too. He'd already thrown a couple guys out. Yeah. I said, that's a really bad call. I said, but I called it something else, a worse call. And so those are kind of stupid things that I've done that don't exactly make friends of the umpires and different people that I've dealt with. But I don't know. I that's not really not pertinent. I'm going to try to stick around a while, and yeah, maybe I can change some minds in the meantime.
That's right. What has this meant to you? What has this career meant to you?
Well, very few people can do what they want to do, and that's what I've done. I'm doing exactly what I want to do. As long as I can play a little ball and write a little bit and do the job that way, I mean, that's what I want to do. I never have had any interest in, I shouldn't say that. I sold mutual funds at one time, but I did it for the money. And there were actually times, and this is when you know you don't want to be in the business, when you have a list of phone calls to make and you hope they don't answer. Then you know you're in the wrong business, because, right?
Yeah.
And I just was never comfortable cold calling. And I just didn't really, once I sit down with somebody, I try to sell them. But I think that as long as you can do something you really like doing, and I enjoy talking to you today. I enjoy everything about going to the games. I'm a Cardinal fan, and I followed the Cardinals. They hit 7 home runs last night, and that's a big night for me. 7 home runs. I thought they were on the verge of losing that game at one time. They were got down to a 1-run game. They wound up winning 16-8. But I follow the Cardinals and I follow Illinois. And those are basically the two things that I follow. I'm a Bear fan, but they've been so mediocre for so long that I went to the Bear games on Sundays with a bunch of coaches for years at Hammond. We went all the time, home games, and those are my teams, and I have to stick with them.
I always tell people it beats a real job, right, Lauren? Beats a real job. It's something
different.
Something different every day. And you're
you know
sports.
What you keep thinking. Here's what I you have this feeling that there won't be anything to write about next week. I mean, it's all going to go away. There'll be nothing. There hasn't been a week in 50 years that there hasn't been something good to write about. Not one week. Now I'm only writing one column a week now, so that's all I care about. But I'm worried. I just turned in my column today for Sunday, and I'm thinking, oh gee, what am I going to write about next week? There'll be nothing. Sports is going to stop. There won't be, but it never seems to stop.
Yeah, stopped for a little bit in 2020, and that was about it. But Lauren Tate doesn't stop either, and we love it. I know you got a street named after you got all this, but Lauren, really appreciate your time. You are a legend around here, and you meant a lot to this community. So just wanted to get that on the record.
You keep doing your job, and I'll keep reading you. How's that?
Well, you keep doing your job, and I'll keep reading you as well. Lauren Tate, appreciate
thanks
the time.
Appreciate it.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. I had a blast doing that one. I hope you did as well. And it sounds like Lauren enjoyed it as well. So glad everybody can enjoy that. Love talking with him. So we'll hope to do more of these. I've done some interviews, long forums with people in the business. Some people have asked about me, Joey, and Derek doing one of these. We could do that down the line. But I got some great podcast guests set up for the next couple weeks. Jay Layman's going to join us. We're going to have one of the Illini coaches join us here very shortly, and we're working on more. So obviously we've been very newsy with the off season and things like that, but we do want to dive into a little bit more fun, a little bit more long form interviews. Me and Joey love doing those. So we hope to do that a little bit more as we get into the summer here on the Illini Inquirer podcast. But everybody, have a great day. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.